Hello, my name is Meredith Abbato, and I'm a senior at Cornell University in the College of Arts and Sciences studying Government and Feminist Gender and Sexuality Studies. This semester, I've had the pleasure of taking the Africana Studies course, Black Women in Political Leadership. For my final project, I will be speaking about the life and leadership of Louise Thompson Patterson, a radical political figure in the 20th century. Louise Thompson Patterson was born in Chicago and grew up in California. She graduated cum laude from the University of California at Berkeley in 1923. She was involved with literary and artistic circles in Harlem in the 1920s and was close friends and colleagues with Langston Hughes. His work, Shakespeare in Harlem, From the Harlem Renaissance to the Red Scare and Beyond, is dedicated to her. She is best known for organizing a trip to the Soviet Union for 22 African-American intellectuals, journalists, and writers who were working towards producing a Soviet-sponsored film called Black and White, which was to be about white supremacy in America. Unfortunately, the film project was canceled by Soviet authorities after the group's arrival, supposedly due to inefficiency on behalf of the Soviet film company, though the true reason seems to be Soviet fears that the film would jeopardize diplomatic recognition from the United States. In the 1930s, she became a prominent figure in the American left, working for the International Workers Order in Chicago and serving on the editorial board of the left-wing Woman Today. Under the IWO's direction, she founded the Harlem Suitcase Theater with Langston Hughes in 1938. She was also a key leader in the movement to free the Scottsboro Boys in the 1930s. She then married Communist Party leader and International Labor Defense Group president William Patterson in 1940. In 1947, when the U.S. Attorney General ordered the IWO to disband, the radical couple threw themselves into the founding of the Civil Rights Congress, which lobbied for civil rights legislation, publicized causes of racial injustice in the South, defended communists persecuted during the McCarthy era, and provided a training ground for many of the leaders of the civil rights protests of the 1960s. She also formed the Black Women's Organization, Sojourners for Truth and Justice. Later in her life, she stayed involved with radical causes, leading the movement to defend Angela Davis during the 1970s. She mentored young Black activists, such as the New York Black Panther leadership and the CPUSA's Black Liberation Committee, who met regularly in Louise's Harlem apartment. She was widowed in 1980 and died in a New York nursing home on August 27, 1999. The book Louise Thompson Patterson, A Life of Struggle for Justice by Keith Gilliard provides a comprehensive overview of Thompson Patterson's life and leadership. She's the subject of many chapters and excerpts from other books and papers on Black communist activism and radical organizing in the South during the early 20th century. Knowledge of her life and work today is informed by these texts, by her writings, and recordings of speeches and talks she has given. Her legacy is honored, and her story is often retold by her daughter, Mary Louise Patterson. What I find to be the most interesting element of Louise Thompson Patterson's story is the way in which she bridged the gap between Black artists and writers and the socialist and communist political leaders and activists during the 1920s and 30s in Harlem. Also unique to Thompson Patterson is the way in which her geographically varied upbringing and early life led to her class-based vision of racial equality, which she primarily attributes to her early years observing the economic oppression of African Americans in the South while she was a teacher at the Land-Grant College in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. While she is best known for her participation in elite intellectual and activist spaces in New York City, what inspired her embrace of Marxist and Leninist solutions to racial discrimination and systemic inequality was inspired by her grassroots work. Born in Chicago in 1901, she spent her childhood moving around with her mother, a domestic worker, and stepfather, a chef, through dominantly white towns in the Pacific Northwest. A light-skinned African-American on the frontier, and often the only African-American child in white towns, she spent her childhood thinking about and experiencing complex racial hierarchies and race relations. For her undergraduate degree, she went to UC Berkeley, where she attended a lecture given by W.E. Du Bois, which she said made her feel, for the first time in my life, proud to be Black, and provoked her realization that she didn't know the literature or history of her people. Consequently, she found herself underwhelmed with her social and academic environment in Chicago, where she had gone to pursue a master's in education. Having just been awakened to the study of Black history and literature, she was unpleasantly surprised by the limited engagement with social issues by her middle-class Black peers at Chicago. She describes her friends there as being exclusively or primarily interested in parties and marriage. So when the opportunity to apply to the teaching position at the university in Arkansas arose, she was thrilled. She says that Arkansas served as a postgraduate course for her in racism. It was there that she says she experienced severe and impactful racism for the first time in her life, for it was her first encounter with pervasive and unmitigated systems of racial oppression. As a land-grant institution, the university where she taught was intended to provide professional training for Black teachers since it was a school for Black students. She notes that the school embraced the separate but equal mentality, and in the environment, it was understood that the school had been established for the separate education of Black people in Arkansas. This philosophy had a severe impact on the atmosphere and approach to learning and teaching at the school. Instead of teaching geometry, calculus, logic, and such, students were taught about machinery, agriculture, dairy work, shoemaking, brickmaking, and even laundry work. She has written that the separate but equal education of African Americans was a sham calculated to do little more than perpetuate Black poverty. The final straw for Thompson Patterson occurred off campus. Just 90 miles away from Pine Bluff, a 38-year-old Black man named John Carter was falsely accused of attacking a white woman and her daughter. A mob then dragged his body to the center of Little Rock and lynched him. This, combined with having encountered refugee sharecroppers and witnessing overall violence against Black businesses, led her to draw connections between the economic oppression and racial inequality. She had not yet articulated this as inherently anti-capitalist, but this was the beginning of Thompson Patterson's communist academic ideology. In the summer of 1927, Thompson Patterson left Pine Bluff to teach business administration at the Hampson Institute in Virginia, a prestigious Black college. She was disappointed to find that the school was a showcase for white paternalism and racism disguised as missionary benevolence and Victorian morality. Moreover, there was extreme policing of sexual activity, which Thompson Patterson notes directly mirrored the efforts to police the sexuality of African-American men and women dating back to slavery. After a large student protest that led to the expulsion of 5 students, her awareness of racial prejudice was further heightened. She sought out theoretical texts to supplement her growing intellectual framework. Thus, she sought out Marx's Das Kapital. This was no easy task. She found the book in a private access section of the library where books that were not accessible to students were stored. After reading the book, she was not surprised that the administration had considered it dangerous enough to hide. While like other Marxist texts, it had a focus on modern political economy, it also encompassed theory linking capitalism to slavery and economic oppression, which she found to be a convincing explanation for the oppression of African Americans in the South and provided a blueprint for Black resistance to white supremacism. The next major event in Thompson Patterson's life came because of W.E.B. Du Bois, who published a letter that Patterson had written to him about her experiences and newfound ideology. The Hampson Institute was not pleased with her rhetoric and message, and she was asked to resign. She did so and accepted the Urban League Fellowship in New York City, the beginning of her involvement in the Harlem Renaissance scene. In New York, she befriended the painter Aaron Douglas and his wife Alta. By the end of August, she had already married Wallace Thurman, the author of influential works including The Blacker the Berry and Infants of the Spring, and had become close friends with both Langston Hughes and Dorothy West. She had also abandoned her fellowship and master's degree in social work. In her unpublished autobiography, she explains it like this. We'd all read the case histories, and you had to develop a diagnosis and prognosis. All of them turned out pretty much the same. There was a pattern. What was the cause of poverty? It was desertion, drunkenness, never the real social conditions that affected the family. This was before the Great Depression. There was no welfare program. There were only the settlement houses and the charity organization society. I hated their approach. It was always based on the personal lives of people, never the social conditions that shaped their lives. After having worked for a year as a typist for Langston Hughes and Zora Neale Hurston, she accepted a job as an assistant to the director of the Congregational Education Society, a liberal organization interested in the related problems of race and labor relations. At this time, she also began attending classes at the Workers' School in an effort to further develop her own understanding of Marxist economic theory. These classes were organized by the Communist Party of the United States. In December of 1931, she founded the left-wing group Vanguard with Augusta Savage. This was the Harlem branch of the Friends of the Soviet Union, which sponsored theater performances, dances, concerts, and hosted discussions on Marxist theory for Harlem Renaissance artists, writers, and intellectuals. Formally, the purpose of the group was achievement in eliminating racial and religious prejudice and the progress made by non-white nationalities under the Soviet regime. As previously mentioned, in 1932, she led a group of 22 black writers, artists, and intellectuals, including Hughes and poet Dorothy West, to the Soviet Union. They were to act in a film for a Moscow company about discrimination against blacks in the United States. Thompson Patterson enjoyed her experience of Soviet society and spoke of how the Russians would push us to the front of the queue line for a bus or a ticket, or offer us seats in a crowded streetcar. For all of us who experienced discrimination based on color in our own land, it was strange to find our color a badge of honor, our key to the city, so to speak, she said. The group eventually split into two factions. Those who saw Thompson Patterson as too trusting of the Russians nicknamed her Madame Moscow. After returning to the United States, she organized a march to Washington to speak out on the Scottsboro Boys, nine black youths wrongfully convicted of raping two white women in Scottsboro, Alabama. In her unpublished autobiography, she writes, "What did this case symbolize? One thing I think was very important was the role of Ruby Bates, one of the so-called victims of the Scottsboro Boys. We had always been taught, I mean black people, that the enemy was poor whites, and that they were poor white trash, and that the boss was the good white man. Ruby Bates and Victoria Price were known as prostitutes. This case, in a sense, exploded that myth about rape and exposed some of the forces that were behind it. That poor whites could be used as the agent to do the lynching, but behind it stood the state, its police, the whole government, in terms of oppression of the black people. Now, I'm not saying that this came clearly out of in every instance, but when Ruby Bates made that trip from the South and spoke at that first meeting of the 66th Street Hall in New York City, the air was so electric that night, if you had scratched the match, I think it would have exploded to see this young white girl march up there and say that these black boys didn't do it. That was the first time that we know of it in history. Some whites got to her to convince her to tell the truth. And there was enough decency in her heart that she had to be honest. She hadn't been completely corrupted. Victoria Price, the other woman, on the other hand, was a hussy, and she never repudiated her first testimony. Ruby, however, had stayed with me at times. I got to know her well, and she was a decent person who wasn't ready to kill nine black boys who didn't rape her. She had a lot of guts." Next, Patterson went on to mobilize laborers, joining the International Workers' Order in 1933. After years of organizing, including a difficult trip to Birmingham, Alabama, which she describes as the meanest town she's been to in her life, she married William Lorenzo Patterson, the man who introduced her to Marx in the first place. She moved with him to Chicago, where he founded the Abraham Lincoln School, an experimental black college focused on socialist theory. He went on to head the Civil Rights Congress and author the We Charge Genocide petition to the UN. In 1970, she founded Congress's Black Women's Auxiliary, the Sojourners for Truth and Justice. Also in 1970, she served as the chair of the New York Committee to Free Angela Davis, and in 1971, she toured Great Britain as part of this campaign. She passed away in New York on August 27th in 1999 and is remembered today by her daughter, Mary Louise Patterson, and her two granddaughters. Mary Louise Patterson did not respond to my request to interview her for this podcast, but has given numerous interviews about her relationship with her mother. To conclude, we will listen to some excellent recorded moments of Louise Thompson Patterson speaking. Thank you.
I'd like my granddaughter to feel that in carrying forward the struggle for freedom and human dignity, that we have to look to our forebears who put this first, be it Harriet Tubman, Sojourner Truth, Frederick Douglass, or nameless blacks, who, contrary to what many establishment historians and sociologists and what have you, novelists, would have us think, is that we never fought for our freedom. And that in each era, we must select the best instrument to carry forward that struggle. And that is what should come first with us. That compromise, that settling for things does not lead to happiness or satisfaction. I may not leave you any earthly possessions, but you don't need them. That you can get for yourself. But I can leave you, what I would like to leave you, is a feeling that whatever small contribution I have made has not been a sacrifice. It has been the thing that has given me the greatest pleasure. And that you will build, and you will do more. And that no one is free until all people are free. That riches don't bring happiness. That you have plenty where millions are starving doesn't fill your belly. That compromise is not a companion of dignity. And that satisfaction and completion of your life will be one in which you can say, I have done my part in the struggle.